Milk Minute, Milk Minute, Milk Minute, yeah!
Milk.
This is Maureen Farrell.
And Heather O'Neill.
And this is the Milk Minute.
We're midwives and lactation professionals,
bringing you the most up-to-date evidence for all things lactation,
so you can feel more confident about feeding your baby,
body positivity,
relationships,
and mental health.
Plus, we laugh a little or a lot along the way.
So join us for another episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Milk Minute.
Welcome, welcome. We have a very exciting guest for you today, Dr. Toya, OBGYN.
Yeah, I'm sure some of you guys follow her on TikTok or have seen some of her stuff. I'm super excited to have her as a guest because she seems really fun and super smart. And that's like our thing, you know?
Yeah. And she's just so down to earth and easy to talk to. And she has this incredible mission to make postpartum better in the United States. Revolutionary, really. And I think that, you know, it's nice for us selfishly to have an OBGYN point of view.
I think it's our first OB on the show, which feels like naughty. Like, I can't believe it's been this long.
I feel bad about it, kind of.
Me too. But you know what? Let me just introduce who she is first, because we're just going to get on a tangent. Dr. LaToya Lusa Sampson is a board certified OBGYN. But she's also a wife and a mother, and she's from the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago, but she lives and works in the United States now. She has over 10 years of experience with obstetrics, and this is why she's our kind of gal. She's an entrepreneur, a speaker, and a best-selling author.
That's right. Doing it all.
Absolutely. And so she has some of her latest stuff she's been doing. She founded an organization called By Default, which is like a directory of Black business owners and professionals who cater to the Black community. And Amina OB-GYN Consultants, which is like an independent contracting company that provides hospital-based OBGYN services. And she has a new postpartum support program that we're going to talk to her about today. This lady's on fire, y'all.
She's on fire and also has a 9-month-old. No big deal.
Yeah. And I just, I really, really love when we can connect with other professionals, one, who are just in our line of work of like birth and postpartum and all of that, and who are also parents and who are running their own businesses and just doing too much. Like those are our friends.
Yep. Those are our people. We bring them onto the show and then we adopt them. And then we try to be their friends forever and we help each other. And I mean, really this podcast is great for you guys, but it's also great for us because we get to meet people that are nuts, just like we are.
Yeah. And I'm excited to talk again about like Black maternal health disparities. I kind of love to talk about that any chance we get. And that's one of Dr. Toya's like passions. So that is very exciting today. Before we get into that, though, we have a ton of patrons to thank, like so many.
Yeah, hit me with it.
Okay. Thank you to Danielle Tierweller, Natalie Robbins, Kari Heggie, Sophia Jorgensen, Claire Carrico, Chloe Nicolaisen, Kat Davis, Jenna Householder, Christy Harrilly, I'm not sure I said your name right, Amy Tebay, and Grace. Thank you guys so much for joining our Patreon. We deeply appreciate your support. We also have a question before we hop into the interview, and this is from one of our patrons, Sarah. So Sarah messaged to let us know that she has a 13-month-old that she's still breastfeeding, and they just had their one-year pediatrician visit, and she said that she is considering when I want to fully wean and I'm torn about it. Sometimes nursing is so sweet, but at this point it's usually toddler chaos. I'm having trouble really considering stopping because the pediatrician suggested that if both baby and I are happy to continue, it would give her more antibodies to help her through the winter and possibly get sick less. So she was wondering like, is her pediatrician right? Is that evidence-based? Are antibodies still in breast milk at that age? Would it make her more sick to stop? So we definitely have answers to that.
Yeah. I mean, if the key is if you and baby are both still happy to do it.
There it is. Yes, there are benefits, but you can wean, and that's okay too.
Yeah, and you can also wean for the times that are the most stressful. So if you only one time a day enjoy nursing and it's right before bed, keep that one. Get rid of the rest of them. If you really dislike your baby using you for comfort nursing when they get a boo-boo throughout the day, then come up with a different comfort item, you know, and you can wean that situation. Breastfeeding is a tool at that point. It's not for sustenance, really. So use it for a tool in a way that feels good to you, and get rid of all the dead weight, you know, that's affecting your life negatively.
Yeah. And like, yes, there are lots of antibodies in toddler milk, of course, and of course it will benefit them. But if you weaned today, would you notice that your baby got sicker in the winter? It's really hard to say, right? Like, wait, we can say these things when we look at giant statistics saying like this huge group of breastfed babies overall got sick less than this huge group of formula fed babies. But baby to baby, it's not always going to look like that. So it doesn't automatically mean your baby will get more sick, you know?
Also, there are some studies that show us that they get sick the same amount, they just recover faster. And I don't know if that's a hydration thing, if it's a, you know, there's too many variables. So your baby's still going to get sick, friend. You know, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. So really, this is your choice. And I don't want you to feel guilty if you decide to wean, because it is absolutely okay to do that. All right, well, we are going to take a quick break to thank a sponsor. When we get back, we're going to hop right in with Dr. Toya.
Have you guys ever been listening to our show and thought to yourself, man, I really want to work one-on-one with Maureen?
I do every day that I sit here podcasting across from you.
Well, lucky for you and everybody at home, I offer both in-person and virtual support through my business. And in my business, Highland Birth Support, I'm dedicated to mentoring you guys through your childbearing year. So that could start with fertility all the way through pregnancy, childbirth, postpartum. I offer home birth midwifery services, doula services, lactation support, herbal support, anything you guys need.
You even do miscarriage support.
Absolutely, I do.
That's one of the biggest things that is so hard to find. And I think that your people that are local to you are so incredibly lucky to have this service.
Thank you. And I just feel really happy to serve everybody. And I'm so happy I can expand my services virtually as well.
Yeah, telehealth for lactation has been really important through the pandemic. And I think we just about got it perfected at this point.
So if you guys want to work with me, head over to highlandbirthsupport.com and check out what I can offer you.
That's H-I-G-H-L-A-N-D birthsupport.com.
Welcome back, everybody. We are so, so excited to welcome our guest today, Dr. Toya. Thank you so much for coming on to the Milk Minute.
Thank you so much for having me. I am excited to be here.
Do you think you could start off our discussion just with a brief introduction to our audience?
Yes. Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Toya Latoya Lucas Sampson. I am a board certified OBGYN originally from Trinidad and Tobago. I'm also a mom, 9 months postpartum, and a wife, and a lot of other things that are not important right now. But yes, I am a patient educator. And that's one thing I'm very passionate about. So I do patient education on TikTok and on other platforms. And yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Yes. And we're going to make sure we link all of that in the show notes. So if you guys want to follow on TikTok or find her website or whatever, it's you just scroll down and you'll find it. I highly recommend you follow her TikTok. I think that's how I found you.
Yes. You can find me anywhere. So Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, everywhere.
Wonderful.
But TikTok is my favorite.
TikTok is everyone's favorite. You know, when it first came out on the scene, everyone was like, I don't know about TikTok. And we were like all addicted to it now. So
yeah. Yeah. But you know, it's Instagram. And I just did a post about this on TikTok. It makes me feel bad about myself, right? It's very aesthetic. And, you know, everybody's all polished and looking perfect. So when I go on there, I immediately feel bad about myself. TikTok is very real and, you know, I can be real on it. So that's why I prefer. It's for my mental health. So there you go.
Well, there you go. And, you know, I hope this doesn't make you feel any way but really good about yourself postpartum to see me here in my unwashed hair, no makeup, My baby actually looked at me today when we were about to start recording, and I realized she's never seen me in glasses before. And she was like, what is happening?
It's hilarious. But you know, I looked at your hair when we came on. I was like, oh, it looks so cute.
It's, oh.
See? Yes, it's the curls. Like, it looks all bouncy.
Yeah. It's curled from the sweat. But how's it going for you postpartum?
Well, you know, I'm a little bit further on than you. My daughter is 9 months, and it's been a journey. It has been a journey. It started off rough. I had a lot of pain, like physical pain, just because she was so big, and I had had some pelvic issues during the pregnancy that continued, some tailbone issues. So it was like physically painful. And then, you know, mentally, it was not great. So I was kind of going through the motions and just like pretending that everything was fine. And everybody seemed to be in agreement that things should just go back to normal, like fairly quickly, right? Just like nothing had happened. And I, including myself. So, you know, we were all in on this, you know, everything's fine. I can get up and do whatever. And then, you know, very shortly, within 6 weeks, I was giving a talk on menopause, like in person. I had all of these podcasts and speaking engagements, and I was doing advocacy work, all of this stuff. Meanwhile, I was like super angry, like just that nobody was taking care of me, but I also wasn't taking care of me. So I don't know how I expected anyone to do that if I hadn't really set the boundary myself. So it actually like came to a head, and I kind of hit a wall, and I had to like cancel a bunch of engagements, some with like a week notice. I felt very bad. Will we scheduled then? It may have been.
I think so, but you know what? We didn't mind. It's okay.
No, we were proud of you. We were like, good for her. That's
yeah.
Great.
So that's what happened. And you know, I was just like, I can't do this. And I had to really take a step back and realize that I need to take care of myself. And you know, when I told my husband how I was feeling, he was shocked. Like, he had no idea. So I was like ready to just not be here physically. You know, I was just like, I'm going to take a vacation. Y'all be cool. I'm out. I'm just going to take a step back and y'all can handle it. And obviously that did not happen. So we ended up like going on a vacation, just me and my husband. My sister came from Trinidad to help. Yeah, my mom was here at the time. My sister came from Trinidad to help her with the kids. You know, we went, I got a break. You know, we talked, cried, did whatever we had to do. And, you know, I made a decision that now I'm going to start taking care of myself. So I got my pelvic floor physical therapist appointment. Like, I started, you know, setting my boundaries, really saying, you know, this is what I need, because I was not doing okay. And just realizing that I can't do everything else, right? So I hadn't rescheduled anything. I was just taking my time. And then eventually I started to feel better and, you know, re-enter the public sphere. So that's when it first sparked my interest in supporting women in this time, in the postpartum, because I felt like nobody else should really have to go through that. And that was, you know, at the 3 month mark is when that kind of happened. And I kind of re-entered the scene around 6-ish months. But then even as I did that, it still wasn't okay. Like, there were still things that were getting me. And a lot of it was surrounding breastfeeding. My daughter is ravenous. She's huge. And, you know, when she goes through her growth spurts, her requirement goes up by like 1 to 2 ounces sometimes. So I was going from needing 4 ounces at a time to needing 6 ounces at a time. So like, I couldn't keep up with her, you know, the pumping and the, so I was just, I needed extra support. And because of my access as a physician, I was able to text somebody and be like, you know, I need help. I had a pediatrician that I talked to every day. So I was able to navigate it, but only because I was an OBGYN. So I was like, well, what do regular people do? Like, what, what are we doing? Because there's no support. And even when I spoke to her, if I wanted to actually go and see her or see somebody, it was like weeks or months wait.
Yeah. Right? I experienced the same thing. And that's kind of how I got into this field in the first place. I mean, I was a midwife, but then I had my first daughter, who's now almost five, and my nipples were all torn up, and I was trying to figure out how to get help. And I'm like, if it's this hard for me as a midwife to figure this out, I can't imagine how anybody manages this. And, you know, I was just listening to the language you were using when you were describing this, and you said you were realizing that you weren't ready. And that, to me, I feel that on so many levels, because I'm like the last person to realize what I can and cannot handle right now. And it takes somebody like Maureen, who was my midwife for this baby, to be like, here's the list of actual expectations of you in the first 6 weeks. Nothing. Like,
right.
Feed your baby, stop trying to go for 2 mile walks, you know, like, really, you're not going to win any awards. In fact, you're going to lose awards if you try to do too much. And so I think that really the expectations for postpartum are super confusing and mixed messages, like, girl, self-care. And then the rest of society is like, but when are you coming back to work?
Right. Right. Yeah.
Well, you just launched a new program to support other people in this position called Beyond the Fourth Trimester, right?
Yes, I did. And it's because of the second part of my journey, right? I feel like it's kind of this disregarded stage. Once you get past that 3 months, everybody is like, oh, you're fine. You're no longer postpartum. You know, you're expected to go back to work if you've gotten that much time off. And, you know, everybody just expects this re-entry into society and like back to normal, but there's still so much support that we need beyond the fourth trimester. And because of what I was going through, I was like, we need support. So I really want to focus on this time. And also before that, you really should be in contact with your physical OBGYN and like getting care and access to things that a lot of people don't have access to. So, you know, that part of the journey I thought was important to focus on, because I didn't see a lot of focus there from really anyone. And I know what I was going through, like we said, it's like, well, it can't just be me. So that's why I decided to do it. It's a 12-week group program, and I really value a group because of that kind of community and the ability of a group to heal itself, right? Because you have so many different perspectives. You have people further along on the journey that can look back and say, oh, well, this is what I did. This is what worked for me. They can look back and also see, wow, I've come really far. I remember when I was there, you know, there's that mixing of ideas in a group that I think is really valuable. And it really all got started from that webinar that I did when I started feeling better. And I was like, okay, 5 ways to thrive postpartum. These are the things you need to focus on. And I was like, oh, I like this kind of group setting. You know, I really like this. So I feel like I can do this as something extended to really, you know, give more of myself in that way. So that's kind of how it got started.
That's really cool.
That is. You know, Heather, this just reminded me, I can't remember the podcast. I was on somebody else's podcast, an Australian one, and we were talking about postpartum, and she's like, so how are your mother's groups working there? And I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, oh, basically the government there just assigns them like pre-made postpartum mother's groups. And I was like floored by this, just thinking like it would completely change people's experience of the postpartum to have a group of people going through similar things, yeah, just at your fingertips.
Yeah. And, you know, I put in a plug, they do not pay me to say this at all. And I only just joined, right? So Postpartum Support International, for anybody who is out there, they have free online groups. And what I really like about it is that they're grouped for whoever you are. So they have groups for Black moms. They have groups for LGBTQ. Like, they have groups for dads. They have groups for anyone, so that you don't have to worry about, am I going to be comfortable here? You know, are they going to understand me? And they said that the offerings for the groups went up during COVID. So they used to have like 4 a week, and now they have like 16, right? So it's out there. This is a free thing. So the government is falling down, but there are people that are providing the service, you know, for free. My program is not free, unfortunately, but you know,
it shouldn't be. You need to get paid.
Right. So I always like to make sure that people know that there are resources, because I just found out about them. Because I'm doing my perinatal mental health certification. So, you know, I was like, oh, this is amazing.
We actually just got a chapter for Postpartum International in West Virginia. So we finally have that, and we're not in charge of it. So it's not putting myself on the back, but
right.
Very, very glad to have that. And thank you for reminding us to put it in the show, and we will definitely link that in the show notes for sure. Well, who are you finding are most attracted to your group?
Yeah. So, you know, because of my social circle, I end up attracting people just like me. So, and you know, it's this thing where people think when you have a certain level of resources, these problems don't exist, but they existed for me, right? So other physicians who are struggling, are there tech people in tech that are really struggling? And it's always at that, I'm returning to work. That's usually the trigger, right? So it's unlikely to be somebody who is a stay-at-home mom. Good for them. I couldn't do it. Good for whoever's doing that. But that return to work transition is really when it just like all comes crashing down. It's just like, oh my gosh, I really have to do this. Like, this, it's about to be real. And that's where people start seeking help.
I completely agree with the physicians. I have so many patients who are physicians, because I think the other piece to that is I'm not ready to begin caring for other people again, because you don't realize, I think, how much of yourself it takes from you when you are caring for people all day long in your career, until you are doing that all day at home also. And then you're like, it's my fear that I'm going to go to work one day and I'm going to be cold and have nothing to give to another mom who's just like me. You know, so it's like, how do you know when you're ready to go back? I mean, that's the question I keep getting asked, is when are you coming back? And I don't know that it's like a timeline thing. It's like when I feel like I have something valuable to give is when I should be coming back.
Yeah, it's so funny you said that. It just flashed me back to a situation where I think I had my son at this point, and I had a full day of the office, and I had patient after patient that just had issues that really took a lot, right? Domestic violence, you know, for trigger warning for anyone, you know, it was patient after patient that just took a lot of counseling, mental health support. And of course, I had to keep it together, because there was a next patient after that, and next patient after that. And I was sitting outside with my husband, and he said something, I don't even know what he said, something innocuous. And I was just like, it just came out, and he was like, what is going on? And I had to tell him, I was like, sorry, this day drained me. Like, I don't have anything left. I cannot, like, I was holding it in all day from, you know, caring for these women. And it just like came out. And it's so true. It takes so much of us to care for women in this way at these vulnerable times in their lives. And then we have to come home and do it for our kids.
Absolutely. With my last child, I took off of like full-time work for about 5 months, but I went back part-time, I don't know, 3 months or something. And the first few weeks I saw patients, I was like, wow, I just don't want to be here. don't really care about anything you're telling me, which is so not me. You know, I'm usually such like an engaged provider, but I was like, great, I'm just writing it down and then see you next time. And that felt terrible. And it feels so bad to like reflect on that and think like, I'm letting myself down. I'm letting my patients down. I, you know, also like we don't have much of a choice sometimes, you know, because Heather and I both run our own businesses too. So it's like, however long we stay off maternity leave is fine, except we're not getting paid anything.
Me too. Yes, because, you know, I left my full-time employee job and I was just doing independent contracting. So if I don't take call, that's it. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. And then it also goes in the opposite direction where then you force yourself to go back to work because you force yourself to be ready. If you just jump in, you'll feel better. You know, how many times do you hear that from people where they're like, you'll feel better once you get there? And so then you get there and you are a waste of a human by the time you get home because you have nothing left. And then you're like mean to your family because you can't be mean to your patients. So every ounce of energy you have is going towards being polite, being, you know, providing practical solutions. And then you get home and you are providing nothing but irrational behavior and screaming, and you can't solve the simplest problem, like where is the blue cup? And when you're at work and you're dealing with a very complicated situation and you're doing well with it, people keep congratulating you on how well you're doing postpartum. Oh my gosh, you're coming back and you're just like rocking it. It's like nothing ever happened. And it just kind of gets you. Like, yeah. I'm not sure what the word is that I'm looking for, but what is that feeling? What am I?
I don't know what it is. It's the same feeling when people tell me I look good postpartum. I thought, and that's a big deal for me because I really liked my body and how I looked and felt before I had kids. So not even before this baby, before my son. And I was really particular about my weight gain during pregnancy and afterwards, just because I wanted to feel comfortable in my skin. I did not feel comfortable the last time. And so you would think when people say, oh, you look great, that it would feel good, but it just feels weird. It just like, and I don't know what to say. Thanks, I guess.
You know, the one I hate the most is when people say, it looks like you never had a baby. That hurts in a weird way because I want to be like, actually, I did have a baby and it did change me. And I kind of want to look like that. I also want to feel good and I want to look good, but like, I don't want to pretend that never happened.
Yeah. And so you see, I feel like the perspectives are so different. And I think that that highlights something that people miss about this time. You never know how people are going to feel about certain things. Some people are going to love when somebody tells them, oh, you look great, right? Somebody is going to feel like, well, I just had a baby. How dare you, you know? And you just never know. So then don't comment. Just don't
say anything. Just say nothing about other people's bodies.
Don't comment on your body. And don't comment about breastfeeding. Don't comment about, like, you just never know what people are going through. You don't know what their perspective is. So it's just like minding your business is for free. Just do that and you'll be fine.
And then can I just tack on to that also? Like, if someone comes to work, you know, at 12 weeks and they look exhausted and they don't look good and they are rough, don't blame the baby. Don't tell them that, oh, you must have a bad baby.
Oh my gosh.
Because Susie over here, who's 12 weeks postpartum, looks great. And you look like shit.
I mean, can we talk about the bad baby, good baby thing? Because that is another thing, right? And I find myself saying it as well. Oh, she's such a good baby. But what does that mean? Like, what exactly is a bad baby? A baby that doesn't cry? And one thing I learned during my training for the perinatal mental health, she talked about a baby that lost, I think, both parents and was being shuttled between family members to care for the baby. And the baby never cried. And, you know, everybody was very happy. This baby is so good. The baby's not crying. And she, as a therapist, saw it as a lack of attachment and feeling secure enough and safe enough to cry. And that just like broke my heart that that is even a thing, right? So it's like, why are we calling these babies good? Crying is normal, right? Crying can mean numerous things, and it doesn't necessarily mean that the baby is in distress. It can be that the baby is safe enough to express itself in the only way that it knows how to, which is, you know, crying. So just more things for us to think about. And this, when I say us, I mean us. Like, when we say these things, what is a good baby? Why are we using this language? And maybe just give it a second thought and say, well, maybe I shouldn't be using those terms.
Yeah, or just ask a question. Like, instead of imposing your statement, just ask them, how are you feeling?
Right.
How right. do you feel about your baby? You like it or not? That's what it is.
Do you want to return it or are you keeping? But, you know, that comes with the other question, you know, is the baby sleeping? Like, don't, it can be so triggering for people. Don't ask. Just, how are you feeling? I feel like just focusing, and that's like one of the biggest things, my biggest soapboxes, is focusing on moms, right? Everybody is focused on the baby. Everyone. We need to support these women, these people who have just given birth. Ask how they are doing, because they need to feel cared for. They need to feel like somebody cares about them and not just the baby. We are not just this prop that happens to produce milk sometimes, right? So start off with, how are you? And just let that be it, and be really interested.
Mm-hmm. And truly, the medical model that we're all working within is extremely baby focused. And, you know, I am preaching to the choir here. And we're all, you know, working with these extreme maternal health disparities and watching people get 2 postpartum visits and everything falls through the cracks.
If that.
Yeah. And their babies, you know, maybe are going in every week to the pediatrician. And it's just this incredible divide.
Yeah. And, you know, the only bright line or silver lining, I should say, with that is that the moms go in with the babies and at least they get screened for depression and mood disorders at that time. That's my silver lining, is at least somebody is seeing these people. And for, I don't know who's getting 2 visits. That's great. But most people,
C-section people.
Well, yeah, this is true. But most people just get 1, and that's if they even go, right?
Yeah, 50% of people don't go to their 6-week postpartum follow-up. And, you know, I really think that most of the time they don't go, not just because it's hard to get there, or maybe they don't have a car, or maybe it's their 4th kid and they can't pack them all up and their partner's back to work, but also because a lot of the prenatal that they had felt so rushed and so, you know, pointless. That's the word that a lot of my patients have used, that they're like, why am I even going to, most of my postpartum trouble happened in the first 6 weeks. Where there right. was no one. I'm good now. So like, right. what's the point in me going?
Right. Or you go and that appointment is also rushed. And all they say is, here's some birth control. Some people like, and I've learned so much from being online. It's another reason I really like what I'm doing. It's because somebody made a video about that she didn't even get an exam. And I was just like, what? We're not examining people now? Like, what are we doing exactly here? Or, and if you go because you're struggling mentally and you fill out this form, you are brave enough to say, I need help, I'm struggling, people don't do anything. So they may not read the form. They may not refer you to anyone. They may not have access to refer you to anyone. So it's like, why am I going when this is what I'm going to get? Right? So it's like so many layers.
Yeah, I really want to continue this conversation. We're going to take a quick break to thank a sponsor. And when we get back, I want to keep like widening our framework here and talking about, you know, our role in addressing these issues.
I I tell all my patients who are brand new parents to put a list of soothing techniques on the refrigerator so they can both remember what they've already tried for soothing baby.
I like to put a happy tummy on that list. It's a natural herbal wrap that soothes and relieves pain instantly, and it's so fuzzy.
It's so great. It helps baby sleep at night, resolves colic, gas, or constipation, and it's great because it has a little cute animal on the front for when they're doing tummy time, which provides gentle pressure to help them get their toots out.
And you know what? They're not just for babies. They have them for teens and adults, too.
So if you're struggling with those period pains, get your herbal warm Happy Tummy Wrap today by going to happytummy.com. And if you love us, enter promo code MILKMINUTE10 for 10% off.
That's MILKMINUTE10 for 10% off your Happy Tummy.
Thank you so much for supporting the show.
Heather, when you were nursing Heidi, did you get thirsty every single time?
Every single time I sat down to nurse, it was like the Sahara Desert had taken up residence in my mouth.
Same. And my go-to drink right now is Liquid IV.
Oh, me too. Liquid IV makes your water work harder because it has a hydration multiplier in it that's great tasting, non-GMO, and it actually has cellular transport technology that delivers hydration to the bloodstream faster and more efficiently than water alone.
You can also get their immune support blend, energy blend, or even one that helps with your sleep health.
My personal favorite is lemon lime, and I think it actually makes me drink water 2 times faster, which is always handy when you have a screaming baby in the room.
I really like the tangerine, and if you want to try that today, you can go to the link in our show notes and use our discount code MILK_MINUTE for 15% off your order.
That's MILK_MINUTE for 15% off your Liquid IV today. Happy drinking. All right, welcome back, everybody. We are going to now ask Dr. Toya about her work with Black maternal health. This is a really important topic. I think we chat a lot about doulas and midwives and lactation professionals on our show, but where do obstetricians and Black obstetricians specifically fit into this conversation about how we are improving outcomes for our Black patients?
Yeah, I feel like it is such a difficult and unique place to be in as an obstetrician in general when you're interested in this type of work, but definitely as a Black obstetrician, because we have this kind of like dichotomy. I'm Black, so I experience the same racism and all the isms that comes with being Black in America, but I'm also an obstetrician. I was quote unquote trained with the tools of the master, right? Like J. Marion Sims is like, that instrument that's named after him was my favorite instrument when I was training. And I didn't know anything about him or his history. I just knew he was the father of gynecology, you know, and I love the Sims. I used to talk about it all the time. And so it's like, when you become woke, and I don't mean that in a funny way, but like a real way, like when you start learning about the history of obstetrics, when you start learning about the history of racism and the white supremacy in America, and you realize the system that you are in and a part of, it's like, well, how do I protect myself and still give the care that my patients deserve, knowing that my education was in this context and is lacking, right? So it is a very unique, very difficult place to be in because it comes with the frustrations of being misunderstood because I'm an obstetrician. It comes with the distrust because I'm an obstetrician, and I almost feel betrayed sometimes when people don't trust me, because I'm like, but I'm just like you, I'm Black, I get it. Or not even with patients who aren't Black, I'm just like, but I'm a really good doctor. Like, I'm not like them, you know? Like, it's when you know how you think and you practice, and all people see is the obstetrician, the person who has harmed them, the person who has harmed their family, who trained in this system. Like, I don't blame them, but it like makes me sad sometimes that the immediate feeling is distrust when I am just like, I'm really just trying to do my best for you, right? So there's that. And then on the other side, there's this pendulum swing because of the history of obstetrics, because of the history in America, people are taking things into their own hands, which is great. You know, I love it. But does it mean that now I've heard people say, I will never go into the hospital again, right? I will never go back to another OB. I will never step foot in there to have my baby. And I was just like, that's great for some people, but not for everybody. Not when you have this baseline increased risk, not because of your race, but because of racism, of preeclampsia and diabetes and all these things. No, you need to step back into the hospital, right? So I'm all for the empowerment and the advocacy, but I feel like the pendulum has swung to a point where it may cost people their lives. And this is not coming from a place of all home births are bad, because when somebody hears an obstetrician saying this, that's the first thing they're going to think, right? That I'm saying all home births are bad. But it's way, I understand that it's more nuanced than that. I understand that it's not all or nothing, right? But I also know that I am unique. Not everybody thinks like me, right? So when I am saying these things and I'm sharing my opinions and people react a certain way, I have to understand that they may go out and meet somebody who is completely opposite, who's going to say all home births are bad, who's going to say, you know, make assumptions about them because you're Black, you don't breastfeed, or you're in pain and I don't believe you, right? So I don't have all the answers, but I feel like we need a middle ground where the conversations that are happening, the advocacy, the work that is being done to decrease the disparities and give equitable, empowering care, it has to include obstetricians. And does it only have to include Black obstetricians? No. But we have a unique place where we can bridge that gap, right? We can make it feel safe for you to come back to the hospital, to come back to your doctor. And I don't like to talk in absolutes, and I like to be very practical. So am I saying every single Black obstetrician is going to be excellent? Of course not, right? And I always like to make these comments because I think that it's obvious, but you know, somebody's going to say, well, I had a Black doctor and she was terrible, right? But yeah, that's what I would like to see. Like, there's a lot of work being done, a lot of advocacy, a lot of education, but it's oftentimes without us as obstetricians, and especially without us as Black obstetricians. And that can't be the case, in my opinion, because even taking a step back from race, when we talk about taking back birthing, right? And we talk about making it a safe and empowering thing and being outside of the hospital setting, we always need a bridge. The best outcomes that happen for out of hospital births are when the access back to the hospital is seamless, right? So there always needs to be collaboration for anyone, right? So we have work to do on the obstetric side, and we have work to do on the non, you know, MD or doctor side, right? So yeah, that's, I can ramble on and on about that, because obviously I feel very strongly about it. But yeah, I just, my whole thing with anything that I'm doing is collaboration over competition. But here in particular, we really need to bring everyone in so that we can, you know, take care of our people better.
Absolutely. And truly, competition really fueled by capitalism usually is when patients suffer. Like that's the heart of it for so many people. And, you know, Heather and I live in an area where it's very hard to find collaborative practice between midwives and obstetricians. And it's so sad because ultimately, while I might have a hard day if I had a hard time collaborating with the on-call OB, it doesn't affect me, but it affects my patient's health, you know, truly, and could affect their overall outcome with their birth and their baby's life and their life. And yeah, it's really... I think you're absolutely correct in basically saying that we can't have equitable care without collaboration.
And also in the beginning of when you were talking about when you first started working as an OBGYN, how your eyes were continually becoming more and more open. And I feel like I had that same experience. So some of the ways I cared for patients 5 years ago is not how I would care for them now. And I think leaving room for people to grow as providers is really important. Black, white, you know, we're all trying to become more LGBTQ+ friendly and figure out that language. I mean, it's an exciting time. It's a little bit stressful because we don't want to get it wrong. But it's an exciting time because people are talking about it. They care about being better and using better language and caring for people in a way that is helpful instead of harmful. So I appreciate you saying that because it makes me feel more human as a provider. And I think when you humanize people, it allows for better collaboration. And I think that's part of the issue too, especially in our state. We have OBs and midwives work very separately. And the teams that used to work together have been dismantled, like pretty much across the state.
Pretty systematically. I mean, hospital by hospital kind of fell like dominoes in the last 3 years. I mean, very rapidly.
Yeah, like we don't really have that many midwifery programs anymore. And so whenever you are not around people and they are not as human, it makes a bad outcome look a certain way. Instead of supporting people, it's more like, oh, I don't want to be around you. If you're not communicating with people, it's easier to vilify people. And I think, again, in West Virginia, we have like 1% Black people. You know, same thing there where it's like, if we are not communicating with Black friends and Black patients and where it's not part of our life, and then we have a Black patient all of a sudden in front of our face, it's like, okay, well, let's start by communicating.
Right.
Are you getting what you need from me? So
let me
ask you that more specifically. How do you think midwives and OBGYNs can collaborate more effectively to help Black patients and eliminate more of these disparities, especially in places that are maybe predominantly white, but then we still have Black people here. It's just, we don't have them all the time. So how can we be better and do better?
Yeah. First of all, West Virginia, man. Wow.
Yeah.
I actually have a colleague who's Black, who lives there. But I think, and, you know, I just want to preface this by saying my PMHC training was like 2 days ago. So I'm going to keep referring to it, not because I'm just like, you know, but it's fresh in my mind. And they talk about cultural humility as opposed to cultural competence. And I found it was so profound because the idea that we can be competent in something like that is really ridiculous. Like, competency means that you're done. Like, you have completed your level of training, you are finished, you have nothing else to learn, and that's impossible, right? You are not Black, right? You are not of South Asian, you are not whatever. So they talk about cultural humility, where you are approaching this person, this human being in front of you, with the knowledge that you are different than I am. I have a lot to learn, and I am going to be humble and not make assumptions. I am going to communicate with you like you are a human. I'm going to ask questions. I am going to believe you when you say you are in pain and when you say you have a headache or whatever else. So I think that is the foundation, that cultural humility, and then also being active. Right? There is this idea of passivity Is that a word?
Oh. Yes, I think so.
Yes.
We'll go with it.
That comes with, well, I am not racist, right? I am a good person. I don't discriminate against anyone. But that's passive, right? I believe in anti-racism. That is an active thing. So you have to actively challenge your ideas and your assumptions. You have to actively challenge your colleagues, because you may see things, you may be fine, but you know there are going to be people around you that are saying things that are not right, that are doing things that are not right. So are you going to have the courage to challenge them, to say this is wrong, you should be doing X, Y, Z? That's where it comes in, and it's an active thing and not just, well, I'm not racist, right? So when you take this active role in caring for your patients and you come at them with cultural humility, I feel like that's a good place to start.
Yeah, I really appreciate you bringing that up. I it seems like that generationally, like, is our step.
Yeah.
You know, to take you know, movements around equity and fighting racism and all that from a passive place, right, to an active place where every person feels empowered to do something.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, I think you can't ask people to do too much. Like, I'm not going to say go write your senator and march on Washington. Like, you need to start somewhere, and you usually need to start with yourself. So that's what I would say for somebody who is wondering, how can I care for my patients in a more equitable way, in a better way, is to start small and start with yourself.
I love that. And I think that's probably a great note for us to really wrap things up on here. Thank you so much, Dr. Toya. This has been a wonderful conversation. And can you just remind folks where they can find you if they want to learn more or join your group or whatnot?
Yes. And I just want to say thank you so much for having me. I love to talk, and you all have been a pleasure to talk to. I loved being here. So I can be found on social media at Dr. Toya OBGYN, and that's on all platforms. So TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And it's DrToyaOBGYN. And my website is the same, DrToyaOBGYN.com. So I made it very easy for everyone.
Perfect.
And the program is called Beyond the Fourth Trimester, and it can be found at my website, drtoyaobgyn.com/beyondthefourth. And we are doing rolling admissions. There'll be multiple groups. I also have a Facebook group called Beyond the Fourth Trimester for anyone to join. The only requirement is that you are beyond the fourth trimester. And it's really just to increase access, right? So anyone can join, and it's a positive, supportive space. I was just telling one of my friends who joined, I want to encourage anonymous posting. You know, I don't know if you're on Facebook that much, but
yeah,
a lot
we
of
have
groups,
a group we manage there, yeah, too.
So a lot of people get frustrated when people do anonymous posts.
Sure.
But I feel like I want it to be encouraged so people can feel safe and not feel judged, because, you know, if you don't want to breastfeed anyone, you want to find out how to not do that. I don't want anybody to, you know, say something and to upset you or anything like that. I just want it to be a really safe, empowering, supportive place. So I invite anyone to join. And yeah, I would love to support you during this time.
Well, I love that. And I love the anonymous posting, because I would use that, because especially physicians and providers, I've got some dumb questions sometimes.
Right.
You know, people probably think that I should know the answer, and probably in my regular brain, I do know the answer. But when you become a mom and you are living it and you're tired, it's like, can someone just give me the answer to this dumb question so I don't have to go figure it out myself? And please don't give me any crap about the fact that I should know this, because I'm a midwife. Like, please just help me. So yeah, I love that. I think that's great.
Yeah, me too.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, we'll make sure to put links to all of that right in our show notes, so you guys can just scroll down on your podcast app and directly access all of that. Well, this has been a lovely, lovely conversation. I'm so glad you came on the podcast today.
Thank you so much. I hope I can come back.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. And I hope all of you go enjoy Dr. Toya's program, because I think it sounds like a revolutionary thing that we absolutely need in the United States and beyond, but specifically here.
Oh, it's so funny. So funny you said that, because like when I've been texting all of my friends to tell people to share the program, and the last line is, I want to revolutionize postpartum care in this country. So thank you.
Yes, we're on the tagline.
Yes.
All right, everybody. We will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Do you have a baby that struggles with excessive gas, fussiness, colic, and general sleep problems?
Well, I did, but then I used Avivo probiotics.
Avivo is a pediatrician-approved probiotic for babies that's even used in NICUs on the gentlest tummies all over the United States.
It is an amazing, unique product that contains a specific strain of B. infantis that we need to digest human milk oligosaccharides.
That's actually 15% of breast milk that your baby will then be able to utilize, whereas if you don't have the bacteria, there's so much extra in the gut, which is why American babies poop like 10 times a day more than babies that are colonized with B. infantis.
I have personally seen this probiotic help my baby and the babies of many of my clients, and frankly, if we're dealing with any of these symptoms, it is the first thing I go to.
And the best part is, it's not like any other probiotic that we would take when we're sick or taking antibiotics, where you take it every time you go through antibiotics for the rest of your life. If you give your baby Avivo in the first 100 days of life, it actually colonizes in their gut and becomes a part of their immune system, which then they can pass to the next generation. And this is how we make change, y'all. Avivo is amazing because it's going to safeguard your baby's health today and give you peace of mind in the future.
Check out Avivo Probiotics through the link in our show notes.
And enter code MILKMINUTE for $10 off.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Well, Heather, that was such a fun conversation.
Yeah, I feel like I just met somebody that I would like to go out and have lots of lunch and wine and dinner with. I feel like we could just ramble at each other about the injustices of the obstetrics world, you know, endlessly.
Yeah, and how fucking hard it is to be a parent. It's just really nice to have kindred spirits there who are like, damn, breastfeeding's hard.
Yeah, breastfeeding's hard, and postpartum is hard, and entrepreneurship is hard, and being a wife is hard. It's just, it's hard, but it's good, and it's worth it. And it's nice that she's putting together groups of people that are trying to find those gems and help you work your way through the hard parts.
Absolutely. Well, Heather, could you present our word in the alcove today?
Yes, I would like to nominate someone, and it is one of our new patrons, Chloe Nicolaisen. And Chloe is an OBGYN as well in New York City, and she is just such a character, and I am so proud of her. I'm not going to give too many details because this is, you know, I'm nominating her, and I don't know how much she wants to share, but she has successfully breastfed twins until I think by the time this airs, they're going to be well over a year of age. And she did it despite many challenges, including the twins being 6 weeks apart.
Ooh.
Yes. So the first one was born a late preterm.
Well, that sounds pretty incredible.
Yeah. I mean, she really nailed it. I mean, we met so many times, and she's just such a nice person, and she's such a good provider. You can tell just the way that she treats people and the questions that she asks, you know, that she's like somebody that I would absolutely go to for care.
Yeah. I love that. But what award should we give her today?
Let's give her the Twinning Excellence Award.
Ah, I love that. That's a great idea. Well, Chloe, you've just done a phenomenal job. We are super happy to highlight that in this episode. And we hope you continue to just keep twinning.
Yes. And I love the pictures that you send me of your kids. So please don't ever stop.
Never stop. We love those, everybody. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening to another episode of the Milk Minute Podcast.
The way we change this big system that is not set up for lactating families is educating ourselves, our loved ones, and our providers.
If you want to hear more, have early ad-free episodes, get Beyond the Boob, you know where to find it. It's on our Patreon. And if you want to join us for free, we also have a Facebook group called Breastfeeding for Busy Moms. And you can join us there and we can chat a little bit on Facebook.
We'd love to see you on any of our platforms. And Maureen is still active on TikTok, believe it or not.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
All right, everybody, we will see you next week.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. It's a myth.